There goes a fly ball towards left field. Going back fast is Kennedy. Kennedy gets there, and he takes it. And the Cleveland Indians are the world champions of 1948. And
this is Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast.
A regular look back at professional baseball in Cleveland from 1901 and beyond.
Now, here's your host, Guardians team historian, Jeremy Fedor.
Start at the beginning. So, you know, I think you're a unique, you know, individual in our history insofar as you're an Ohioan and you played at Ohio State. I think there's only a handful of guys that ever came out of Ohio State to actually, you know, play for, actually you played for both Ohio teams too, mm-hmm. but to play for us. I think Swisher was probably the last one too. But, you know, growing up, were you most likely a Reds fan just in terms of where you grew up?
Yeah, we didn't get a lot of Reds games, but Channel 43 always had the Indians on.
Oh.
So I probably saw more Indians baseball than I did. I didn't watch a lot, period, because I was always playing.
Okay.
Not necessarily baseball, but just anything I could to stay busy. So I didn't watch a whole lot of baseball. But, yeah, I was a big – how could you not be a 75, 76 Reds fan? And I grew up – I hate to say this, but I was a Dodgers fan as well. Mm-hmm. I like Steve Garvey and obviously Pete Rose, but my buddy up the street would play wiffle ball and he was the Red, so I had to, my favorite player, Steve Garvey, so I was the Dodgers and you had to bat whatever hand they bat. If they batted left, you had to hit left. Of course, your favorite player always got a hit. It was always a hit regardless of it, you know. So that was just, I guess, how I started my baseball career. I don't know how to say it. More of a Reds fan than I was Indians, but like I said, I saw more Indians. You know, the Hargrove, how could you not see the rain delay thing? But that's what I remember about watching baseball when I was a kid.
Did you ever make the trip up to the old stadium when you were a kid? Or
I got called up one road trip. It was their last game in the old Cleveland Stadium. The series. It was a Sunday, so I got to be in the stadium, never got to play there, but got one game in the stadium.
Now, you kind of hit on something I think most of the guys that come through here is multi-sport athlete in high school then. Was that your, what were you playing back in high school?
I was a football, basketball, baseball. Not in any particular order, but.
Was baseball clearly your path forward, you think, or were you getting offers from?
I was getting offers, not necessarily Division I, but I got some basketball. I got a few football, but majority were baseball. And I pretty much had known that was probably my best sport, but you never know, right? You never know.
And, I mean, do you see that, I guess? It seems like it's a problem for kids now. It's this early specialization in sports. I mean, you have kids that are, you know, 10, 11 years old that are just doing one sport. I mean, it seems like most guys, and might even see it now on the field, those guys probably played, you know, I think I was talking to, so Cody Allen was the quarterback for his high school team. Like, you know, the specialization just seems to not work too well, or not good for development, or, I mean, you think your
other
sports?
I think it's great for development.
Okay.
Teaches how you use your body in different ways. There's different areas in different sports. You know, football and basketball is a very disciplined sport. You know, know your job, know your what your job is on defense, on offense. Being in the right place at the right time. How to move your feet, and you get on the baseball field, and it kind of just carries over. And that's what I experienced with it. Anybody that would ask me, I'd say definitely play a different sport because you're going to learn how to use your body better and learn how to control it and become a better athlete.
And being an Ohio guy, was it always Ohio State for you? Was that an easy decision or was it?
Oh, no, it was lucky is what it was. I had gotten a letter. My parents were always harping on me about my grades. You got to get good grades, good grades. I said, oh, my athletics will get me a scholarship. Well, yeah. They kept saying, no, it won't, no, it won't. And I kept saying, yeah, it will, yeah, it will. Well, when it came down to it, my grades weren't very good until I started applying myself. But by that point, it was too late. But anyway, I got a trip to Indiana, and the coach told me we're very interested, and so I went home, told all my buddies, hey, you know, and I'm thinking I might go to Indiana, it'd be awesome. And then I got a letter in the mail, and this is right during basketball season, and I'm a pretty good basketball player, averaged 17 points a game. And Friday and Saturday night, I don't know if I got double digits in either game, and my parents knew something was up, and they asked me, what's wrong with you? And I said, nothing. You know, nothing's wrong. And they're like, no, something's wrong. Well, my mom lost something. She was digging through the trash, found my letter. So right away, they knew what was up. And so they sat me down and said, hey, don't worry about where you go. You know, it doesn't have to be Indiana. I know that you probably wanted to go there, but something will work out. So got recruited to go to Anderson. You know, they knew I was going to play baseball. Once I got there, the football and the basketball coach started calling and hounding me every day. Hey, can you play football as a freshman? You'll play basketball as a freshman. I'm like, yeah, well, I don't know if I can do it academically. And the baseball coach never called me because he knew I was playing baseball. So these were trying to get me to play all three, and I pretty much made up my mind that I was going to play football and baseball, and played in a travel ball tournament in Columbus, Ohio, and Ohio State's coach saw me, asked me if he could visit, and they offered me not a scholarship, but a walk-on, and if I proved myself academically and obviously athletically, a scholarship would be in the future. Well, I weighed the cost of going to Anderson and probably what it would have cost to go to Ohio State, and I have to play football if I go to Anderson, and Saturday mornings aren't going to be fun. So that's how Ohio State worked out. But I was very lucky with my grades. You know, today, no chance.
And
I didn't mean to interrupt, but just one of the most things I'm proud of is that I did graduate.
And when did you start realizing that, you know, the scouts were looking at you in terms of making it a professional career?
I had out of high school, I threw 80 in high school. My summer league coach sat me down, took me to lunch one day and said, hey, the Yankees want to take you as a free agent after the draft. Would you be interested? I said, I don't know. I said, I've never even thought about that. I'm going to go play professional baseball. I'm 17 years old. And he's like, well, that's why I'm sitting down and talking to you about it, Dave. I don't think you're ready for that. And if it doesn't work out, they're just going to shuffle you aside. So I would suggest going to college, but I just wanted to let you know that the opportunity was there. So went home, talked to my mom and dad about it, and they were like, no chance. You're not doing that. So to answer your question, got to Ohio State my sophomore year. I did really well in the summer league in Virginia. So I started seeing some scouts come to the game, and then my junior year, there's a dozen, 18 guys back there with radars every game. So that's when you kind of realize, hey, something's up. But I was kind of naive. I just went about my business, worked hard, and did what I was supposed to do to help my team win. And fortunately enough, I did get drafted.
And you get a phone call, I imagine, second round with Seattle, and then you're just packing your bags and.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had gotten a call from the St. Louis Cardinals, asked me about first round, what kind of money it would take. I had no idea. I'm like, I don't know. What's first rounder get? And he's like, well, we can't tell you that. I said, well, how do you expect me to come up with a number then? Well, we need you to give us a number. I said, okay, 100. I said, I don't know what to tell you. You asked for a number, I gave you a number. Well, 7 o'clock at night, I finally get a phone call. Hey, this is Tom Mooney with the Seattle Mariners. I said, who? So I was expecting St. Louis or somebody, but the Reds were interested. I talked to the Reds, but never spoke to Seattle. That's why it was kind of shocking. But yeah, finally got a call at 7 o'clock. All my buddies came up. We celebrated. Of course, I called my parents and didn't you know the whole thing, but buddies drove up from Springfield and we had quite the evening.
So you get your debut September 8th, 1990. What do you remember about getting that call up?
The call-up was kind of weird because we were in the playoffs in AAA, and I was expecting, you know, not to get called up. They said, you know, it was a possibility, but we wouldn't know. They'll let us know sometime tomorrow or the next day who's going to go, and they never said anything. So I got a save that night in the first game or something. I pitched the next night, got a save, I think, and I'm sitting in, they called me in the office, said, hey, you're going up, about three or four of us. And we're in, you know, in the AAA playoffs, but three or four of us went up, and I just remember being shocked. I wasn't expecting it. I thought there was a possibility after we went to the playoffs, but it was kind of sudden, but I knew it was a possibility because they had, you know, our manager had mentioned there's a possibility there's going to be four or five guys get called up. Well, everybody kind of looks around, you kind of figure out who the four or five guys are. So I knew that possibility, I was one of them, and when they didn't, like I said, when the playoffs started and they didn't move any guys, I just figured, well, maybe after playoffs.
And when you make it to the majors, anyone that you remember taking under their wing or mentors in terms of your first few years in the majors?
No, never had that. Now, people are going, oh, he must not have been a very good guy. Just, I don't know, never had. All my other teammates always had a guy. I remember getting in San Francisco. I got traded to San Francisco, and Rod Beck was telling me, hey, so-and-so just bought me a pair of boots. I'm like, oh, that's nice. And I go, what was that for? He goes, well, he's been showing me around. He's kind of mentoring me. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. So I didn't get jealous. I just was wondering why. Kind of weird. Somebody asked me if anybody was, and I said no. I made sure of it, though, when I was in that position that I did, one way or the other, whether I just picked one kid or I just kind of helped them all in a way the best I could, or, you know, give them advice or let them know that they're here to help us win. Don't think you're a rookie, that you're here to help, and kind of make them feel, you know, part of the team right away instead of them walking around on eggshells.
And you kind of moved around quite a bit early on too, and to get the news that you were going to Cincinnati must have been pretty cool then.
Yeah, kind of, that was definitely out of left field. Had no idea. Actually, I was in the in the men's room for the game, and my bullpen coach comes in and says, hey, Burr, Dusty wants to see you in the office. I'm like, well, he's like, right now? I'm like, well, I can't really make it right now. And he's like, no, we need you in there now. And I'm like, I'll be in there as soon as I can. So I got in there, and Dusty was kind of crying and told me that I'd been traded. I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting that, and I don't think he was either, but it turned out to be a blessing. Got to go to the playoffs, made it to the NLCS that year in 95 with the Reds. But yeah, just a blindsided, you know, wasn't expecting it, and actually three of us got traded off the team and went to a pretty special team. I mean, we had probably Barry Larkin, obviously. I didn't want to say we didn't have any superstars. Obviously, Barry Larkin's a superstar, but it was just a good group of guys, and just every day somebody did something. And if you came into town in a four-game series, you had to fight to get that last game. I mean, it wasn't just, well, you beat us 7-4, we'll get you. It was like, came down to the last second, or always a nail biter if they did beat us. And it was a lot of fun.
And so you spent a few years near home in Cincinnati, and then you get the call too then in 98 to go out to Cleveland. That wasn't was that a free agent? No, it was a trade for Sean Casey.
Sean Casey, yes.
Yeah, so
I was opening day starter for the Reds. That's another story. I got to go to practice. We got like a 3 o'clock afternoon practice. Try to get out there. We play the first game of the year at noon, or 12:05 the next day. So kind of an early day. Get home, get a nice meal, get ready for opening day. Well, I go do my throwing, go do all my prep stuff. And hey, Burb, you want to take BP? Hey, absolutely. Who doesn't like to take BP, right? So I go take my VP, and they say, hey, they want to see you in the office. I'm like, that's weird. I must be something to do with maybe the game's going to be delayed a little bit with all the ceremonies and the first pitches, and don't worry about being ready at 12:05. Maybe, you know, be ready to come on the field at 12:00, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just, and then they said, hey, we're, good news, bad news, we're trading you to Cleveland. I'm like, okay, well, what's the bad news? We're trading you to Cleveland. I said, what's the good news? We got Sean Casey. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know. I knew the Indians went to the World Series the year before, so I was like, I think it's great news. So, yeah, we got to go to the ALCS that year. Didn't pan out for us.
I mean, you were in the league, so you had to know what was going on in Cleveland during that 95-96, you
oh,
know,
sure.
the magic and the lineups that those teams had. So I imagine there's probably some excitement to pitch with that kind of offensive support.
Well, it was definitely a comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the best thing that I can remember about pitching here in Cleveland was we were sold out every night. The energy was incredible. Even when I wasn't pitching, I was felt like I was ready to kill somebody, athletic-wise. But yeah, it was just, the energy was tremendous. Obviously, we had a super offense, basically an all-star team. I think so. There was a lot of great players. Even the guys that, you know, weren't the Roberto Alomar mm-hmm. or the Tommy, they were still top-tier players and all-star caliber. And heck yeah, it was fun to pitch for them.
Did you notice any more attention, like, in your personal life from fans being in this Cleveland whirlwind of an era than you know when you were in Cincinnati or Giants or whatever? I mean, was there more? Cause I grew up in the era and I remember just the fanaticism and how wild it was, and I don't know how it was like as a player.
To be honest with you, I was I'm a people person, so I don't shy away from it. I always signed after the game. I'd be out there 15 minutes or 20 minutes signing autographs, and my wife always knew it. If we were going somewhere, hey, I got to sign autographs. Regardless, if we were going to go see a movie and we had 15 minutes to get there, well, we're going to be 15 minutes late. So that's something that I felt responsible for and actually wasn't a problem. I enjoy it. If somebody wants my autograph, I'm honored. So I always sign that. But as far as going out in Cleveland, when I go out with my family or if I was just by myself, people never really bothered me. Every once in a while, they'd come up and ask me for an autograph, but they knew who I was most of the time, but treated me just like I was supposed to be there, just like the next person.
What was it like getting to, you know, watch future Hall of Famers like Jim Tomey out there every day and seeing what he could do? And that had to be pretty special, too, to see those lineups. Manny. Well,
of course, playing the game, you recognize, guy. Hey, this guy could be a Hall of Famer. And you recognize things like that because you get to watch him and you get to watch him do special stuff. And, you know, Jim comes up, hits a 500-foot home run. You just stand there like, doesn't surprise me, you know. I'm used to it. Robbie Alomar playing defense, stealing bases, stealing pitcher's pitches, just student of the game. He'd sit there and talk to you, tell you what the pitcher's going to throw. I still feel that there's probably possibility some other Hall of Famers on that team, but we'll see.
And how is Grover as a manager, too?
I like Mike. He let us be. He was a player's manager. Had expectations, but very lax as far as, you know, the rules or anything. Be professional, obviously. We didn't have to worry about a bunch of stuff, but be ready to play the game at 7:05. There's nothing better than that rule. If you can't be ready to play 7:05, then what are you doing? So I think everybody at this level is mature enough. They knew what they need to do, and there doesn't need to be a lot of rules. And I think Mike did a good job of that. When it was time to stick his foot down, he took care of it.
How many, and I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot too, but that game in 01, I mean, I don't know how many pitchers go out and have, you know, it was you're gonna have a rough start every now and then. Mm-hmm. You know, get pulled and down by 12 runs, get a no decision. I mean, is that something that you in the moment were just felt like any other game? Well, we scored a few runs, make it respectable. Or when did for you? Did you kind of perk your ears up and say, "Oh, I'm gonna start paying attention to that"?
Well, that was a horrible year for me. So when all that was going on, I was already going through some, I'll call it purgatory. Used to be an innings eater, pitching 6, 7, 8 innings, and now I can't hardly get out of the third inning, and it's killing the bullpen, and I'm wearing this on my shoulders big time. And here comes Seattle, and here I go again. I'm done in the second inning, and just beside myself, I don't know, what happened. I won 16 games last year. I pitched 200 plus innings. Just a million things on my mind, and paying attention, 13-4 or 12-4 and 13-8, whatever. And you're like, holy shit! Next thing you know, there's Omar, and I'm like, no way. And that was awesome. It's history. Everybody goes, hey, I saw you on TV. I go, yeah, that was history. Don't worry about the score.
One of the things I like to ask pitchers about too is, Feller used to be around a lot, spring training or fantasy camps or whatever. Do you have any good stories with Bob, or what was it like to just have that presence?
I have a lot of great. Well, I don't necessarily want to call him great, but I have a lot of conversations with Bob. Just most of it, he liked to talk about himself a lot, but I didn't mind it because he deserves it, and people misunderstood sometimes that he's talking about himself, but that's just how he talked. It wasn't necessarily bragging. He just was saying, this is what was. But a lot of people thought, he brags about himself. But to me, I just thought, hey, he did it. We're just talking about it. I asked him the questions, so he's answering the questions. And always, wherever I was at, always spoke to me, always, hey, Burb, how you doing? Good. Good to see you, Bob. We'd have a little banner and awesome guy. And I think that's why he was always around, because you could talk to him and there wasn't any barriers, or he didn't mind talking to anybody. And I always enjoyed him. So anytime I had the opportunity to speak to him or at least say hello, I took advantage of it.
And I guess going back to Bob, and then just baseball being a sport that's so steeped in its history, when you were coming up, was that something that went through your mind? Like, hey, I'm pitching out at Fenway where, these greats have been, or I'm out at Wrigley where, these greats have been. Was that something for you that you cared about when you were younger? Or is that something maybe as you look back at it now, you're like, I was just a dumb kid pitching at these, historic ballparks against these future.
Oh, no, you take all that in everywhere you go. Growing up watching World Series, and you see Yankee Stadium or you see this stadium, and man, I remember watching so-and-so play here, and now I'm playing here. Absolutely. Boston, I made my debut there in the big green wall, and I got to go back and sign the wall, and Yankee Stadium with the old Yankee Stadium where they had the park out there, and it's just kind of a, I don't want to say eerie feeling, but it is, because I'm amongst... Mm-hmm. Not because I play baseball, but I'm in the same area that these greats played, and it's just, you can feel it. It's kind of weird, and now it's not there anymore, but hopefully they moved it over into the new stadium. I haven't been there yet.
Any particular batter that you just felt always had your number anytime he was up? You just stick the bat out and poke it out?
All of them. I had troubles. I was a down-away guy. So Mike Piazza, Frank Thomas gave me problems, and Larry Walker, for some reason. Some guys just see the ball off it. Ken Griffey Jr. really didn't have a problem either. But that's just the way it is. You face another guy, and he can't hit you. And he's the greatest hitter in the world, but he just can't hit you. It's kind of funny, but that's how the game works.
And anyone ever, again, when you were younger coming up, just surreal, you're in the on the mound and so-and-so is in the batter's box and you're just,
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I was going to tell you the story earlier. So we're in Cincinnati, bunch of kids. Dad takes us to the ballpark, right? We're going down and watch the big red machine, and Expos are in town. A gentleman named Warren Cromartie playing left field. And I believe it was Warren Cromartie. I hope I don't screw this story up, but I'm pretty sure it was him. We were, throw us a ball, you know. Whole game, and there wasn't a whole lot of people in the left field bleachers, but there was enough, but he knew who was yelling at him because we were constantly yelling. And finally, about the seventh inning, he throws us up a ball, and my buddy jumps up to catch, and it tips off to his hands, and I see it pop up, and I tip off of mine, and I turn behind, and there's this little girl, and the ball just goes blip, and we're like, hey, oh. So we're like, thanks, dude. So I was pitching in Kansas City, and Randy Johnson had pitched 8 innings, and I'm going to come in and finish the game and come out to pitch the bottom of the ninth. And now batting for his last major league at bat, Warren Cromartie. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I never got to see him, never got to tell him the story. I got him to ground out, hit a ground ball to second base, but I was like, holy cow. So I hope that's the kind of story you're looking for.
Yeah, it's wild. Do you, now as a fan, I guess, too, you miss the National League pitchers batting?
I do. I loved it as a player. It's definitely an element of the game that you have to take serious. Not necessarily the hitting part, getting your bunts down. Mm-hmm. That's what you're expected to do. But, some of these guys throw some pretty nasty stuff. It's not easy. And that's what you kind of take pride in, is make sure you're getting your button down. But when you do get that chance to swing it, it's definitely fun. I loved it.
And I guess besides the obvious, pitch timer and whatnot, how much do you think the game's kind of changed since you've last pitched? I mean, just some of these guys are throwing things that seem, it eventually has to plateau, I'd imagine. The human arm can't throw 110.
Yeah, well, that's why you're seeing millions of arm surgeries, too. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't look at it that way. If you can throw at 105 and get your arm operated and come back a year and a half and keep doing it for another 5 or 6 years, okay, that's up to you. But pretty special that you can throw it that hard. So take advantage of it. What do I think about it? I think that, all the shifts and all that stuff, I think baseball should be played baseball. Obviously, you put the guys where they belong, where they're supposed to be positioned. You can move them a little bit. But then on the other hand, you got a guy that's up to plate, and he's got the whole left side of the infield, and he doesn't just take the bat and hit the baseball over there. I never understood that one either. All the analytics and stuff, I'm a pitching coach. I get it, but I don't get it because you still need to know how and when and why, and there's a lot of things besides just getting a spin rate or a vertical angle approach and all that. Obviously, those are tools that help you get hitters out, but the bottom line is always execution.
And just coming back to Cleveland, you've been quite a few places in your career, but Cleveland kind of hold a special place in your...
Absolutely, it does. Sold out every night. Got to go to the playoffs 3 of the 4 years I was here. Should have went the fourth year. We lost by a half game or a game or something. Not saying it was because of me. It's just we had a great team. I mean, great clubhouse, great teammates, great city to play in. Fans obviously sold out every night. Treated us well. So definitely, hands down, this was it.
Are you able to kind of follow along with our seasons at all? Or
a little bit. Of course, they're in my heart. Do I get mad if they won or lost? I don't really pay attention. I know they have to win out and Twins have to lose.
No, it's over now.
Okay, well, that's tough, but still a heck of a year. When you have a chance to go to the playoffs, it's always a successful year. I don't know how the Guardians... I've probably said Indians about 100 times in this interview.
No. Well, that makes sense, though, because you played
yes,
for the Indians.
Yes.
So there's no...
So it's kind of hard for me to get used to the Guardian thing, so excuse me if I say it wrong, but
all fine.
I was a Cleveland Indian.
Yeah.
Proud of it.
Yeah. Is it, I mean, Cleveland too, I guess, as a former pitcher, have you been able to, you know, since you've been gone, I mean, there's been several Cy Young winners, and just, you know, watching Corey Kluber, I don't know if you paid attention to, you know, just our factory of pitching, I guess.
They're talking about it's a factory. Yeah. There's a bunch of guys coming through.
Yeah.
It's great. That's what wins. Gee, that's funny. You guys are winning.
Well, I think that kind of covers us. We'll wait till Nate comes back.
Okay.
Nate, we finished, baby. We're good.
You've been listening to Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast with Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor.